believe that the president, by using tariffs, has successfully gotten the attention of the Chinese.
You will hear about the U.S.-China trade meetings through the eyes of American business. This is Wednesday, February 13th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, the man in charge of the U.S. military in Korea gives his assessment to the U.S. Senate. What many consider an offensive-smelling food is doing very well in one very populous Asian country. All of that and much more on today's VOA Asia. Signs that the U.S. and China might reach an agreement in trade talks have helped push world stock markets and bond yields broadly higher. They did that on Tuesday. U.S. and Chinese officials expressed hopes that the new round of talks, which began in Beijing Monday, would bring them closer to easing their nearly year-long trade war. Beijing and Washington are trying to hammer out a deal before a March 1st deadline, without which U.S. tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports are scheduled to increase to 25% from 10%. Joining us on VOA Asia is Craig Allen. He is president of the U.S.-China Business Council. Craig, most likely you've heard about these seemingly positive signs. What's your reaction, and how about the many companies you represent? How do they feel about it?
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I think that the news out of Beijing is mixed, that there has been progress on intellectual property rights. There's been progress on market access. It's less clear that there has been progress on the structural issues, such as industrial policy, such as state-owned enterprises. And so we're hopeful that Ambassador Lighthizer and the team will keep focused on these longer-term and more difficult issues, in addition to making progress on intellectual property as well as market access.
Now, I have read that you and your organization takes a positive view as far as movement on IT, but not so much on tariffs.
Well, we are against the imposition of tariffs, indeed, because tariffs are a tax on the American people, and the money that has gone into the Treasury since the imposition of tariffs have all come from importers. However, we do believe that the president, by using tariffs, has successfully gotten the attention of the Chinese, and that progress is being made. And we just want to ensure that after having gone through so much difficulty and so many negotiations and so much turmoil, that we come out with good results from this round of negotiations. And good results would mean addressing some of the structural barriers that keep out foreign companies from the Chinese market.
What do you feel the possibility of attaining that goal are?
Well, I think that it is probably a matter of gradations. So as I noted, it looks like good progress on market access. It looks like good progress on intellectual property rights. It looks like good progress on the purchases of commodities. When we get to industrial policy, we believe that Ambassador Lighthizer and his team will make a good progress. But this becomes difficult when we're talking about cyber, for example. And by what means can the administration address China's use of cyber or the internet to obtain industrial secrets? So we would like for the administration to focus on that. We would like the administration to focus on state-owned enterprises. There are great swaths of the Chinese economy, be it energy or finance or construction or steel or media or telecom, that are totally controlled by Chinese state-owned enterprises in the state, and they need to be opened up. And that is a more difficult prospect that Ambassador Lighthizer is wrestling with right now. We hope to see substantial progress in these areas.
Where is there room, as far as you are concerned, for the U.S. to negotiate its current stance with China?
Well, I think that we have more leverage now than we've ever had before, and have to give President Trump great credit for creating that leverage. Further, in addition to the trade talks, it's important to note that both the Chinese economy and the U.S. economy are showing some signs of weakness. The indicators on the Chinese side are quite negative, particularly when viewed from the prism of private sector enterprises. And so this is a good time to try and address these issues in a fulsome manner. So these next couple of days in Beijing will be very important, and we're hopeful that the American team will be able to bring home real change for state-owned enterprises, real change in China's industrial policies, and a commitment by the Chinese not to use cyber or espionage for commercial good.
Galen, president of the U.S.-China Business Council, speaking with me via Skype. This is VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Afghanistan's Taliban have named a 14-member negotiating team for upcoming talks with the U.S. Special Envoy. The Taliban's team includes the jailed brother of the head of the powerful Taliban-affiliated Haqqani Network. Authorities say a budget hotel fire in New Delhi has killed 17 people and injured at least four others. China plans to fund and install modern reception centers, drinking water and cold storage facilities at main entry points on the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And police in eastern Myanmar fired rubber bullets into a crowd of several thousand people protesting a statue of the father of their leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia. North Korea's nuclear and other military capabilities remain unchanged and still pose a threat to the United States and its allies. That's from the top U.S. military commander in South Korea as he spoke with a Senate panel on Tuesday. VOA's Bill Gallo is with us. He covered it. What was this all about?
Well, this was a regular briefing to Congress by the top U.S. military commander in Korea, and his comments were consistent with what U.S. officials, both in the military and intelligence community, have said on North Korea's denuclearization, that they don't think that it's necessarily likely, that they don't see any evidence that it's happening, but also they were quite optimistic about the ongoing diplomacy between the U.S., South Korea, and North Korea.
In what way? How could they be optimistic if all we are hearing here is that North Korea has continued its development of nuclear weapons?
Yeah, it's a good question. And the way that General Abrams put it today was this. It's been 440 days since North Korea has conducted a missile flight test or a nuclear test. Now, it's true that they have not taken any major steps, or really hardly any steps at all, to give up any of its military capabilities, but just the fact that there is that reduced tension, the possibility that they will make some concessions at these upcoming talks, I think it's really enticing for a lot of people, and it reflects, I think, a degree of concern on behalf of military and intel officials that in 2017, when Donald Trump was threatening to totally destroy North Korea and making threats like this, I think there was a degree of concern on behalf of U.S. officials, and this reflects that.
What about questioning from those lawmakers who were there to question this witness? Did they bring up any questions about whether we can trust North Korea or not?
There was some general skepticism in Congress in the questioning that senators had today in the Senate Armed Services Committee. I think that many people quite rightfully are skeptical that North Korea will give up its nuclear weapons. And even there was a poll I saw by a Seoul-based think tank last week that suggested that even many South Koreans are also skeptical that North Korea will ever give up its nuclear weapons. They've, of course, made promises to do that kind of thing before, and they've never followed through. But it's really hard to throw out the whole process only because what is a better alternative to return to this time of really heightened tensions? It's really just a question of do you really want to go back to the days of 2017 whenever we're talking about fire and fury and destroying North Korea?
Did General Abrams say anything about the upcoming summit meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un?
He did. He said it's his personal opinion that he is glad the summit is taking place, that he thinks it is a great opportunity for diplomacy to be advanced, even though he expressed some skepticism that North Korea would actually give up its nuclear weapons. He was saying that, yes, this is a great chance for diplomacy and peace to be advanced and for North and South Korea to continue to get along.
Bill Gallo is our VOA correspondent who is soon to be stationed in Seoul. Have a nice trip.
Thanks so much.
This is VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, U.S. President Donald Trump said Tuesday he could let the March 1st deadline for a trade agreement with China slide for a little while, but that he would prefer not to and expects to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping to close the deal at some point. The latest round of talks in Beijing kicked off Monday with discussions among deputy-level officials trying to work out technical details. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us. Chinese New Year is underway. The holiday typically begins with a new moon that occurs between January and February and lasts about 15 days until the full moon arrives with a festival of lanterns. This year, the Chinese, or Lunar New Year, began on the 5th of February. Festivities were in full swing across Chinatown here in Washington, D.C. on Sunday, where hundreds gathered to celebrate the Year of the Pig. VOA Asia's Yelin Chun reports.
Tied to the lunar calendar, the Chinese New Year is a time to honor household and ancestors, bring the family together for feasting, as well as festivals featuring live cultural performances and family-oriented events. Hundreds of people gathered in Chinatown in Washington, D.C. to celebrate the New Year. Families and friends bundled up despite the cold to ring in the Year of the Pig. As one of Washington's signature Chinese New Year celebrations, it features Chinese folk dancers, beauty queens, kung fu demonstrations, and, of course, the traditional Chinese dragon dance. The Chinese New Year, which is dictated by the lunar cycle, highlights a Chinese zodiac animal, and this year, the pig gets the spotlight.
The pig is, like, really honest, and it's just, it exemplifies, like, good fortune. So, it's just, it's the last animal until it goes back to the rat and then keeps going on and on.
Honoring the Lunar New Year isn't just a Chinese tradition. It's celebrated in South Korea, Vietnam, Indonesia, and many other Asian countries. In Washington, people of all ethnicities gathered in Chinatown to experience an inclusive Lunar New Year celebration.
I love the culture, and I wanted to see the parade and see what's going on. I just think that it's so family-oriented, and they have so many beliefs in, like, the different animals for the years and everything. I feel attracted to it. It's really the first time that I come here. So I just wanted to see how it is and see if I probably will be here next year.
As children sit atop their parents' shoulders to get a better view of the parade, families hope for a happy and prosperous new year.
It's an auspicious year. Everyone loves pigs. Of course, pigs bring bacon, and bacon has made everyone's life better. So we're looking forward to 2019. The same thing for everyone hopes for new year. You know, good health, prosperity, and well-behaving kids.
Chinese New Year festivities will continue until the 19th as the holiday lasts 15 days. Yelin Chun, VOA Asia.
Coming your way, what many say is the world's worst-smelling fruit is very profitable in an Asian country. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the Thai king's sister, disqualified this week by the Election Commission from running for prime minister, apologized Tuesday for causing problems for the Thai people ahead of next month's election, the country's first since a 2014 coup. The commission said members of the royal family should stay above politics, echoing a sharp rebuke from the king that her bid was inappropriate and unconstitutional. You're listening to VOA Asia.
This is Business Scene. I'm Skylar Ogden. Durian cultivation is booming in Malaysia. Grown across tropical Southeast Asia, the world's smelliest fruit, as it is known, has become a favorite among Chinese consumers. Wang Tao owns a durian shop.
Malaysian durians are mainly grown in half-wild environment. They maintain the most original taste of durian, so real durian eaters cannot resist their rich taste, creamy texture, and high sweetness after they taste them.
Growers in Malaysia are increasingly shifting from small orchards to industrial-scale operations in order to meet the soaring demand from China. The government has backed the expansion of the industry and hopes to more than double production by 2030. Environmentalists worry about the sustainability of Malaysia's forests as large swaths of jungle are being cleared to make way for plantations. They say that palm oil plantations have already caused too much deforestation. Sophie Tan is an environmentalist.
There must be a balance of how much we produce and how much is being, you know, is taken care of. You know, the natural environment must be there for us to survive. Otherwise, we won't have water, we won't have anything.
The Malaysian Agriculture Ministry says plantations will expand slowly and that it is encouraging growers to use existing plantations. Amazon is rethinking its decision to open up a new location in New York City because of opposition from the community and political leaders. The tech giant selected both New York City and Virginia as new locations back in November, promising to bring thousands of jobs to each region. Newly elected Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, whose district borders the proposed Amazon site, opposes the deal, saying it will strain local infrastructure and drive up the housing market. Local unions have also protested, saying that e-commerce will only destroy the more traditional jobs in the area and that New York State subsidies for the project are far too high. Amazon hasn't purchased or leased any land for the project yet and says it wants to invest in a community that wants the company there. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news alert from VOA Asia that opinion piece in the International New York Times criticizing Pakistan's powerful army was censored by its local publisher on Tuesday, replaced by a blank space in a country where it can be dangerous to reprimand the military. The article by the leader of a movement which calls for an end to what it says are enforced disappearances by Pashtuns was widely available online, however. This is VOA Asia. From Los Angeles to London to Cape Town, veganism and vegan products are gaining popularity. The Economist and Forbes have dubbed 2019 as the year of the vegan. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports on a diet that is entirely plant-based.
Tocaya Organica, a Mexican restaurant chain with outlets in California and Arizona, says it's set to open 11 more restaurants in the U.S. and abroad by the end of 2019. CEO and co-founder Tosh Berman says the vegan message is simple.
The message of Tokai is really, it's a message of better living. Better living from a health perspective, better living on the impact that it creates on the environment, the ingredients that we put in our body.
Have a nice day. Thank you. Eric Gallen, a personal talent manager, and Julia Rose, a social media creator, are regular customers. Gallen says a good dose of vegan food is a must for him.
Today, for example, I started at 7 a.m. I'll have 8 meetings today. And if I don't eat well, I don't feel good, I don't have energy, I don't perform well.
Grocery stores like this one in the Los Angeles area are also trying to cater to this trend. Airborne organic grocer and cafe brand manager Joyce DeBrevain says veganism is growing.
Whether people are deciding to go vegan for ethical reasons, for health reasons, or because of climate change concerns, we definitely are seeing more and more people, probably not going all the way vegan, but definitely incorporating more vegan items into their diet.
The vegan philosophy extends to clothing and cosmetics, too. Many beauty products include honey, beeswax, and keratin, which is a protein found in animal cells. In London's Hackney neighborhood, James Fisher opened Whip, a vegan hair salon.
We wanted to be as eco-friendly, sustainable and cruelty-free as possible. And being a vegan hair salon is part of that. So our products are vegan and organic, and the refreshments that we serve are vegan as well.
Sarah Maddox is a client at the salon.
I choose to have my hair done at WIP because I really appreciate their company ethos. I try to align the way I spend my money with my personal values, and this is something that's quite important to me.
A report by US-based Grandview Research said the global vegan cosmetic market is estimated at $12.9 billion. And according to a report by research firm Global Data, 6% of US customers claimed to be vegan in 2017, up from just 1% in 2014. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
There is clothing that can help cool you down on hot days. And of course, there are a number of clothing options for keeping warm on colder days. Now, researchers at the University of Maryland say they have developed a new fabric that not only can cool or warm, but can automatically sense conditions to determine which mode to activate. On hot days, the fabric opens up and allows body heat to escape. On cold days, it limits the amount of heat that is allowed to pass through it, allowing the body to retain heat. The researchers say their new fabric is made with a special yarn that consists of fibers of two different synthetic materials. The yarn is then coated with carbon nanotubes, which is considered to be a unique type of lightweight and conductive metal. The developers admit that more research must be conducted before the fabric can be made available commercially. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And we continue on VOA Asia. Thailand and the United States have hosted the opening ceremony for the annual Cobra Gold military exercise. It's the biggest activity of its type in the Asia Pacific, with 29 nations taking part in, as participants or observers. Thailand and the United States Tuesday hosted the opening ceremony. Seven nations, in addition to Thailand and the U.S., are active participants: Singapore, Japan, China, India, Indonesia, Malaysia, and South Korea. About 4,500 U.S. personnel on land and sea are taking part. The acting head of the U.S. diplomatic mission in Thailand, Peter Heyman, said at the ceremony in the northern Thai province that the aim of the exercise, first held in 1982, is to strengthen cooperation and interoperability. The three major components of this exercise, which ends on the 22nd of this month: military field training, humanitarian assistance, and disaster relief training. Its goals include enhancing maritime security, preventing and mitigating emerging disease threats, and responding to large-scale natural disasters, according to a statement by the United States. The ceremony was attended by the Thai Chief of Defense Forces and the commander of the U.S. Army First Corps, representing the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command. And here's a story out of Indonesia, where police have apologized and pledged disciplinary action after officers draped a live snake around the neck of a suspect to persuade him to confess during an interrogation session in the easternmost area of Papua. A video circulated online shows a man being questioned about stolen mobile phones, seated with his hands tethered behind his back, yelling in distress as a snake is pushed toward his face by an officer. That will wrap things up for us here on VOA Asia. Make sure you are with us tomorrow, and we will have another program for you. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. Let's hear from you at VOA Asia Facebook and our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, John Ellison, the managing editor of this program, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.